of draconian law is being constructed to establish a system of neo-feudalistic serfdom.
Remember, it was Bill Clinton who gave us NAFTA. And it was Al Gore, the hero of the environmental movement, who was the hatchet man for the Clinton administration to cram NAFTA down the throats of a reluctant Congress.
Now, this is a good deal for our country, Larry, and let me explain why.
Al Gore, who carried the ball for NAFTA and GATT, is now one of the top standard bearers for the elite's agenda.
I didn't interrupt you.
Okay, now, guys.
NAFTA. Why? Huge numbers of manufacturing jobs left Canada, came into the United States because of a 15% wage differential. We pay our workers less than Canada. Now, when you've got a 7-to-1 wage differential between the United States and Mexico, you will hear the giant sucking sound. No, there's a political lesson, there's a business lesson.
He serves as the front man for the carbon tax cap and trade scheme, which will not only increase taxes on every American, but will also transfer our national sovereignty and rights to a tyrannical world government, all in the name of saving the earth.
Is the legislation that we are discussing here today, is that something that you are going to personally benefit from?
If you believe that the reason I have been working on this issue for 30 years is because of greed, you don't know me. I've been willing to put my money where my mouth is. Do you think there's something wrong with being active in business in this country?
I am simply asking for clarification.
I'm proud of
the relationship.
I'm proud of it.
My name is Dr. Tim Ball. I'm a climatologist. I have a PhD in climatology from the Queen Mary College, University of London, England. And I've been studying climate both with my 9 years in the Canadian Air Force, where it was essential to flying, and then after that at the university. So it's essentially been the whole theme of my career. Initially called climate skeptics, I said, but all scientists are skeptics. If you're not a skeptic, you're not a scientist. And then when that didn't work, then they came out with the charge that we were climate change deniers. And I remember when I was first called a denier, and it was in the Times of London in England. And of course, the word denier was clearly deliberately chosen because of the Holocaust connotations of that term. So it was not only a charge that you were ignoring the truth, but you were doing it in a very evil way. And of course, I laugh about that now because my whole career has been anything but a climate change denier. I've spent my career trying to educate people to how much climate changes naturally. So I'm anything but a denier, but of course that is part of the politics.
Under the Nazis, there was something called race science. They had a lunatic theory of eugenics, the Aryan heritage, and all the rest of this. Absolute crackpot pseudoscience. There was no empirical measure or empirical test for the validity of those theories. They simply asserted them, and if you were a professor who stood up to them, then the Gestapo would come and take you away. We are perilously close to such a situation right now. Any academic, any other figure standing up to say the global warming theory of Al Gore is a piece of crackpot nonsense is in danger. You'd be fired from a government job, and in many universities, your job would be in danger.
And, of course, it's also part of what's called ad hominem, that if you can't defeat the person's argument rationally, you start attacking the person. And we see that with these terms, and we see it with Al Gore calling them flat earthers.
Congressman, you began by denying that there is a consensus on the science. There is a consensus on the science.
Well, you must have been listening to our testimony that we've had for the last few days with dozens of experts that have come in who have given completely different views.
Well, there.
So I would encourage you to go back and look at the testimony this committee's heard.
There are people who still believe that the moon landing was staged on a movie lot in Arizona.
And neither of us was one of those. And I know you like giving those cute anecdotes. This is not a cutesy issue. We're talking about that can export millions of jobs out of our economy, out of our country.
Richard Lindzen, a MIT professor of atmospheric physics, said it many years ago when he said the consensus was reached before the research had even begun. And then scientists like myself that stood up and said, hold on a minute, I got problems with this. Oh, paid by the oil companies. Don't trust that guy.
What the international scientific community is saying is correct. There is no legitimate basis for denying it.
Now, you hear the consensus argument. Hear, well, the majority of scientists. What they're always talking about is, and originally the IPCC was about 3,600 scientists. It's now down to 2,500. That's the people they're talking about. But when you look at it, most of them are bureaucrats. They're not scientists at all. And very, very few of them are actual climate experts.
Now, the consequences of that, and whether that's because of man-made CO2, I think are debatable.
If CO2 is not causing the climate change, what is? What are the major driving factors? And so they're essentially the ones that are left out by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's unbelievable to me that they can come out and ignore the sun. Everybody knows the sun goes in, it gets cool. You notice that, right? You have an eclipse, the temperature drops, and the birds start to get excited and so on. When you look at the seasonal changes with the sun, how you can suggest that the sun is not a factor is really quite remarkable.
Giving us false scientific information is not going to clean up our environment. Speaking with a lot of promises and innuendo is not going to help clean up our environment.
The globalists have co-opted the environmental movement. There are a lot of real environmental problems we face, like genetic engineering, where they're splicing plants, animals, insects, you name it. Toxic waste dumping in the ocean. No one wants to breathe bad air or drink toxic water. But the global carbon tax has nothing to do with that. It's a tax literally on breathing. Go out on the street or talk to your friends, your neighbors. Ask them, hey, should we ban dihydrogen monoxide? It's bad for the environment. The average person will sign your petition calling for the banning of water. That's right. Dihydrogen monoxide is water. It's the same thing with table salt, sodium chloride. And that's exactly what the establishment is doing with carbon dioxide. Ooh, dioxide. It has this scary sounding name. But the truth is, it's one of the four elements of life on this planet. Oxygen, carbon dioxide, water, and sunlight. And if the establishment can tax and list as a toxic waste one of those basic four building blocks of life, carbon dioxide, they can regulate and control every facet of our lives and shut down any businesses that aren't part of their new world order.
The idea that carbon is a pollutant is essentially a way of saying that humanity is a disease or a cancer that ought to be wiped out. Genocide. People have argued in this environmental coterie around Obama, around Holdren, the theoretician of de-development, who is now the science advisor of the White House, really the anti-science advisor. They've argued that babies are carbon monsters, carbon machines, and that every time you breathe out carbon dioxide, you're part of the pollution of the planet. This is an absolutely anti-human doctrine.
They use the environmental movement to promote their real agenda, which is globalization and federalization and power.
The advisor to Gordon Brown wants to exterminate one half of the population of the British Isles. Now, that's something Hitler might have tried to do, or Stalin. They didn't succeed. Will Gordon Brown do it? You can read this in the statements of these lunatics. Radical environmentalists, fanatical Malthusians, tree huggers, whatever you want to call them. This is an ideology of genocide which can be documented exhaustively, ad nauseam, out of their own statements.
When Gore said the science is settled, that raised red flags amongst the media and then also amongst a lot of other people that sort of knew that that wasn't true, other scientists, and started to look at it. And of course, the more they looked at it, the more they realized, no, science is never settled.
What is coming down now is environmentalism is nothing but phony science. Nothing but phony science. And if we really believe in the environment, if we really believe in freedom, if we really believe in truth, we need to get some straight answers.
Now, the Kyoto Agreement, of course, was reached in the city of Kyoto. And what was interesting was several things came out of that. But the first thing was that not all countries had to participate in Kyoto, but not all had to take action. Only the developed nations were required to reduce their level of CO2. The developing nations were excluded. Now, of course, at that time, China was, and in some ways you can argue it still is, a developing nation. So it wasn't required to meet any targets under Kyoto, nor was India. The U.S., of course, held out. And what's interesting is that the U.S. Senate voted 95 to nothing against the Kyoto Accord, even though Al Gore was the vice president at the time. And lucky for him, he didn't have to cast a deciding vote. But so it was 95 to nothing against it because the U.S. Senate saw, no, this is a socialist distribution of wealth. This is going to cost jobs and economy. And so they scrapped it completely.
We're now told that you have to buy carbon offsets. In other words, if you have sinned by having a carbon footprint and by carbon emissions, you've got to buy a carbon offset, which is usually a scam. Somebody claims to have planted an acre of grass in the third world. It never happened. They take your money and laugh all the way to the bank. But they're telling you that in order to cleanse your guilt, you've got to buy a carbon offset.
Talk about carbon polluters. You talk about them. It's my understanding that back in 1997, when you were vice president, Enron's CEO, Ken Lay, was involved in discussions with you at the White House about helping develop this type of policy, this trading scheme. And is that accurate? Is it inaccurate? It's been reported.
I don't know. But I met with Ken Lay, as lots of people did, before anybody knew that he was a
crook. Right. And clearly, you can see why so many of us are concerned about this type of cap-and-trade energy tax that would be literally turning over this country's energy economy.
I didn't know him
economy.
Well enough to call him Kenny Boy.
Well, you knew him well enough to help devise this trading scheme. And obviously, we know what Enron and these big guys on Wall Street like Goldman Sachs, and I know you've got interest with Goldman Sachs.
No.
Well, that's been reported. Is that not accurate?
No, I wish I did.
With executives from you're partnered in companies with executives from Goldman Sachs. Well, if you're not.
Al Gore has got to be the greatest con artist in modern history. This guy claims he invented the Internet. Even though it's on record, he's a liar, and he got away with it. He was the pitch man that successfully sold, as vice president, NAFTA and GATT. This lowered the standard of living in the United States and Mexico and almost completely deindustrialized our country. Now he's saying you should pay him and his private company, set up by Enron, a carbon tax on breathing. Look, if you want to buy Al Gore's propaganda, go ahead. But before you do that, you should at least look into the claims he's making.
There was a meeting in the White House in 1998 between Al Gore and Bill Clinton, Ken Lay, and Lord Brown. Okay, well, who were these people? Well, we know the president, the vice president. Ken Lay, of course, was the president of Enron. And Enron was a major, major player in the carbon credit, carbon trading. And in fact, stood to make an enormous amount of money out of it. And so it was part of the collapse of Enron. And Lord Brown, of course, was the head of the largest oil company in the world. And they were looking to buy into this, as is happening now, where the energy companies are becoming the big promoters of, oh, we've got to go green, we've got to go to alternate energies, and all of this stuff. They saw a business opportunity and leapt onto it, and one that would make them look green again.
When it came time for the 1,200-plus page greenhouse gas emission and carbon legislation to be voted on, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, would not let the Republicans or even members of her own party see the bill until minutes before the vote. Republican Minority Leader John Boehner engaged in a rare House filibuster and read shocking section after shocking section from the legislation.
I really hate to do this, but when you file a 300-page amendment at 3:09 a.m., the American people have a right to know what's in this bill. And have a right to know what we're voting on. page 48. Each building code enforcement department receiving a grant under subsection A shall impanel a code administration and enforcement team consisting of at least one full-time building code enforcement officer, a city planner, and a health planner or similar officer. I can take you to Chickasaw, Mercer County in my district. They don't have one full-time person that works for the village. All right, not one. Look at the mandate on every city, village in America right here in this bill. So that we're not only going to tell you what the codes are going to be, but we're going to tell you how many people you need to hire to enforce this. Page 41, determine any geographic area within the contiguous United States that lacks a federal power marketing agency. Because, you know, we can't move power around the country without a federal power marketing agency. We do it today, but now we have to have a new government agency to do this. All California housing standards are now going to be imposed on every American community. You don't have the right to have your own building standards in your community or in your state. Hell no! The federal government's going to tell you what they are.
It quickly became clear why Pelosi and the Democratic leadership were desperate to keep the contents of the bill secret before the vote.
Now, because of this underlying bill, the federal government will virtually have control over every aspect of lives for the American people. It is time to stand up and say, we get to choose. We choose liberty or we choose tyranny. It's one of the two. The underlying bill represents the tyranny and the intervention of the federal government. It's our choice. What will we choose today? Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny?
And I know that we'll be facing the single moms that heard from last summer. They can't afford the gasoline bill. They can't afford the propane. You didn't do a great thing. You hurt some really decent families struggling, trying to make it, and this is going to be their death knell. It breaks my heart. I yield back.
It is, of course, a carbon tax on economic activity, farming, manufacturing, real production here inside the United States. It would tend to shut down even those miserable remains of an industrial economy that we still have after the collapse of the Detroit automakers and their related subcontractors and so forth.
Every home and business in the United States would be federally regulated and controlled. Mandatory home inspections will be carried out by federal inspectors, and it's all at the expense of the homeowner.
In New York, they're called the environmental police.
On this day, a surprise visit to a market in Brooklyn's Chinatown.
And every day you're not in compliance, you face huge fines.
Go to page 235. The secretary may set and collect reasonable inspection fees to cover the cost of inspections required. So number one, they can come in, the federal government can come in, inspect your house, and send you the bill. And if they find that you're out of compliance with this new federal code, the secretary shall assess a civil penalty for violations of this section. And then further, going to page 236, each day of unlawful occupancy shall be considered a separate violation. We're setting up a global warming Gestapo that can literally come in, and now this new term, unlawful occupancy. So now living in your home is considered unlawful under this bill. This is ludicrous.
Worst of all, carbon czars in more than 35 federal agencies are given unlimited dictatorial power to tax all forms of carbon and carbon emissions. The Commissar Green police openly brag that they will have the power to selectively enforce the new edicts on a case-by-case basis.
It's funny because when I tell people what I do for a living, the first response usually is, you're the environmental police. There is no environment in New York City.
With this new power, the Green Mafia can take over the entire economy through selective enforcement.
We know, Madam Speaker, that this national energy tax will cost the American people $2 trillion. We know that. We know this will result in a loss of 2.5 million jobs every year for the American people. We know that. We know this will result in a reduced standard of living for Americans. We know that. What is the point and what's the benefit?
The same central banks that have stolen more than $50 trillion from national treasuries across the planet are now creating a new derivatives fraud through the cap-and-trade carbon tax system that dwarfs their previous Ponzi schemes.
We've just watched a financial meltdown in this country, the likes of which hasn't been seen in some time. Now, if people like credit default swaps, they're really going to like the carbon swaps that are going to occur and the carbon future swaps. We spent a full day in this committee last summer talking about the manipulation of the energy futures market in oil. We're going to create, I fear, another such system that people who have an inclination to react dishonestly to systems are going to actually have a new opportunity. Is that not a problem?
A select group of central banks are lobbying for the same legislation to be passed worldwide. Once the so-called green economy laws are in place, only global megacorporations and their subsidiaries will be allowed to do business. Van Jones, Barack Obama's first green jobs czar, has stated repeatedly on the record that the new green economy is only a cover for a complete revolution against capitalism and the total redistribution of wealth. But what Van Jones doesn't tell his sad followers is that the elite are bragging that the modern green movement was designed from its creation to destroy the middle class and transfer all wealth into the hands of a super elite. They're not doing this to uplift the poor. No, the goal is to enslave the planet and usher in a new dark age. Every nation on Earth is in the process of, or has already passed, its own set of carbon tax laws and regulations. If their plan is successful, every nation on Earth will not only pay tribute to the powerful world government, but every facet of human life will be regulated by the technocratic global planners. Under the carbon tax scheme, China, India, Mexico, and over 150 other nations are exempt from the global tax system. You see, the bankers already own and control the third world. Their final target is the middle class of the West. Once they've dismantled the economies of the United States, Europe, and Japan, they believe no one can stand in their way. In short, the New World Order is a global corporate takeover. In their global corporate state, there is no room for individuality, sovereignty, or independence. As their program begins to face more and more opposition, lawmakers and supporters of the man-made global warming hypothesis want laws to be passed, making it illegal to question their theories. Recently, the head of Greenpeace was forced to admit that the Arctic and Antarctic ice caps grow in the winter and shrink in the summer, and that this is all part of a natural process driven by the tilt of the Earth and the sun.
The cosmic radiation coming from space, the amount reaching the Earth is affected by the strength of the sun's magnetic field. So the magnetic field of the sun is almost like a gateway controlling the cosmic radiation reaching the Earth. The magnetic strength of the sun is also related to the number of sunspots. So they are directly related to changes within the inner structure of the sun. The amount of cosmic radiation reaching the lower atmosphere creates more cloud, right? And cloud forms, you need to have what are called condensation nuclei. That is, little particles around which water can change from water vapor or gas into water droplets, minute particles that are visible in the form of clouds. We've known for a long time that there was more cloud than the amount of particles in the atmosphere, because we assumed it was clay particles and salt particles that were creating this condensation process, but there was this gap. We now realize, of course, it's the cosmic radiation that's doing it. So what the cosmic radiation is doing, controlled by the magnetic field of the sun, is putting up it's like putting up a screen in the greenhouse and blocking out the sunlight, and of course that then affects the temperature of the Earth. That's why there's a relationship between the sunspots and the temperature on the Earth. So we now know the mechanism, but they completely ignore that.
More than 31,000 scientists from across the United States, including more than 9,000 PhDs from the fields of climatology, atmospheric science, earth science, and hydrology, signed a petition rejecting man-made global warming as a scientific fraud. This shattered the hopes of the so-called consensus that the mainstream media had been pushing for years, that every scientist on Earth believed that man-made global warming was a fact. If the people are able to block their carbon tax takeover, the elite's agenda to establish a planetary world government will collapse. To force their unpopular agenda upon the planet, the controllers are racing to complete the construction of their police state control grid. Borrowing from tactics used in the past by communist, fascist, and other totalitarian regimes, every form of classical textbook tyranny is now being implemented in the West.